Matthew chapter 8, verses 28 through 34. And when he came to the other side, to the country of the Gadarenes, two demon-possessed men met him and came out of the tombs, so fierce that no one could pass that way. And behold, they cried out, "What have you done with us, O Son of God? Have you come here to torment us before the time?" Now a herd of many pigs was feeding at some distance from them. And the demons begged him, saying, "If you cast us out, send us away into that herd of pigs." And he said to them, "Go." So they came out, and they went into the pigs. And behold, the whole herd rushed down the steep bank and into the sea and drowned in the waters. The herdsmen fled, and going into the city, they told everything, especially what had happened to the demon-possessed men. And behold, all the city came out to meet Jesus, and when they saw him, they begged him to leave their region. This is the word of the Lord.
Good morning again. So good to see you here today. I read this week a story that I found to be powerful from Christianity Today. I wanted to open this morning by sharing it with you. It's a story by a man named Heath Adamson, who shared a story about his own deliverance from the occult and from addiction. He wrote how even as a child, the spiritual world was very visceral and real to him because of his involvement with his family in the occult. He remembers crazy things, he says, like watching a chair slide across the floor, watching a candle floating off of the coffee table. He had all kinds of experiences with the supernatural that led him on this all-consuming quest, even as a young adolescent, for meaning. And when he was in eighth grade, he sat next to a female classmate in his homeroom class. And this girl sensed in her heart one day, as she was a follower of Jesus, that God was impressing on her to begin to pray for Heath, this boy who sat next to her. So she began to pray for him every day. They struck up a friendship. But then the eighth grade year ended and they went on their separate ways. This girl attended church, but Heath continued to have regular encounters with the demonic realm. He became addicted to various kinds of drugs. He looked like a human skeleton. He lived his life in quiet desperation. At one point in the article, he writes this. Let me quote. "In my junior year of high school, I asked my physics partner about religion, and he invited me to church. I actually went, and one Sunday night, I lay in my bedroom thinking about who God was and what the truth could be, and I felt like God himself had come into my room. I remember saying out loud, 'Jesus, you are who you say you are.' Deep inside, I believed he loved me the way I was. God's presence was so real that I could almost feel him breathing in my face. I told my physics partner I would go back to church with him on a Wednesday night. I said, 'Remember when the pastor asked if people wanted to ask Jesus to forgive them? Well, I think I need to do that.' And at the end of the service," he writes, "a volunteer pastor said a prayer and shared the gospel, and I was the only one who responded. And that night, I embraced the grace of Jesus, and my body was supernaturally and instantaneously healed. My substance addictions vanished. The very next day," he says, "I discovered something incredible in my mailbox. Inside the mailbox was a handwritten letter from the girl who I had sat next to in eighth grade, who had dared to listen to a part of my story and who had been praying for me ever since then. He ended up, years later, marrying this girl. And when they got married, he read her prayer journals, of which he learned that he had been the subject of her prayers and the prayers of her friends for years and years and years. And that is what helped soften his heart and lead him to salvation." Heath concludes the article by writing this: "Looking back at my salvation, I am the product of the Savior who stepped into my darkness. And instead of turning away in horror, showed me who he was and who I was created to be." That's a story that really moved me this week I think it's a story that shows us what the meaning of this passage in the New Testament is. Jesus steps into the darkness. Jesus steps into your darkness and powerfully heals. We've been in Matthew for a number of months now, haven't we? And we've come down from the mountain. We spent a number of months in Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7, which is called Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. And in those chapters, we saw a collection of Jesus' words. We saw Jesus is the great wise man, the great teacher to whom we should listen. Now we're in chapters 8 and 9, which are a collection, an anthology of Jesus' works. We see that not only is he a great teacher, but he is a powerful Lord. Last week, Adam Lopez showed us that Jesus is powerful enough to heal the centurion's servant with nothing but a word. That's verses 5 through 13 of chapter 8. We see in the story above the one we're looking at today that Jesus, with a word, is able to calm a storm that had freaked out his fishermen disciples. And today in our passage, Matthew tells us that Jesus' power over evil is displayed in his exorcism of these two demon-possessed men in the country of the Gadarenes. And what I think the Holy Spirit wants us to hear and believe and learn from this story is that Jesus still moves towards the darkness in our lives. He moves towards the darkness in our lives, and he powerfully rescues and delivers his people. Let's look at the story. It's a fairly straightforward story. We'll look at it in three steps. The presence of evil is step one. Step two is the power of Jesus. Step three is the plea of the people. All of those start with P. I hope you noticed because I worked hard on that this week. Okay, step one, the presence of evil. Now, for many people, for most Western people, I might say, for most enlightened people, this is a little bit of a bizarre story. It's a story that reminds us that the New Testament is a very different world than our own world. It's a story where we read about things happening that we likely have not experienced much of. It might even make us a little bit uncomfortable. And the reason, obviously, is because this is a story that demonstrates the real presence of evil spirits, of the demonic realm, of Satan himself in this world. It's a fairly straightforward story, despite the events being bizarre. Jesus, we see in verse 28, he crosses the Sea of Galilee to the east side of the sea in the region of the Gadarenes, which was a Gentile area. And right away, two demon-possessed men meet him. If you're familiar with the Bible, and especially if you're familiar with the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, you might know that the four Gospels tell us about a good number of exorcisms or casting demons out that Jesus performs, including this one. But elsewhere in the Bible, there are barely any stories like this. There's almost no exorcisms in the Old Testament, and I think there's only one other exorcism in the rest of the New Testament. So a question is, why is there so much overt demonic activity in the Gospels? And the answer is because Jesus, in the Gospels, is moving into enemy-occupied territory. And he is disturbing and disrupting the evil powers and principalities of this world. A bit of a skin-crawling illustration of that is if you've ever walked into a dark room and turned the lights on and you see rats scatter everywhere into the recesses of the room. Jesus, as the light of the world, is causing the rats, the demons, to scatter when he shows up on the scene. So evil, according to the New Testament, according to this story, is real. Evil spirits are real. Satan is real. The Christian faith looks squarely in the face of deep and radical evil and calls it what it is. The Christian faith has an explanation for some of the horrors and atrocities and evils that we see in the world. That's one of the questions that the Bible likes to press on us. How do you explain? How do you explain the presence of deep evil in the world? W.H. Auden, some of you may know, was a 20th century author and poet who lived during World War II. And in fact, early in World War II, he lived in New York City on the Upper East Side, and the neighborhood in which Auden lived was then a primarily German immigrant neighborhood. And he tells the story of going to see a film in his neighborhood, where in the movie theater, a lot of the people around him were people that he knew and lived among and worked among. And the movie was basically a Nazi propaganda movie, giving Nazi spins on the German invasion of Poland. And Auden writes that he was stunned because when Polish people showed up on the screen, these people watching the film with him, people that he knew, his neighbors, and some of them his friends, stood up and screamed, "Kill them! Kill them!" After this experience, Auden writes that he lost his faith in atheism because his atheism had nothing in it. He had nothing in his belief system that could account for what he was seeing in these people, and from his own reaction to the overt evil that was resident in that film and that was coming out of people's hearts. He had no way, you see, to account for the presence of evil. How do you do it? How do you account for the atrocities, for the evil acts that every generation sees? The scriptures say that there are powers at work that amplify systems and structures and places and authorities in darkness and wickedness and sin. This is a reality of the dark world we are in. And what does Jesus of Nazareth do? He steps right into this evil. Isn't that a striking part of this story? Even the geography of Matthew is important here. You might remember a couple of months ago when we saw that Jesus makes his home base in Capernaum. I made the point that Capernaum being in the north is not what you would expect of a Messiah. It's far away from the Jewish center of power in Jerusalem. It's away from any place the Messiah was expected to be. And here Jesus is even further north than Capernaum. He's in the land of the Gentiles, which explains, by the way, why there's a herd of pigs nearby. There's never a herd of pigs in Jewish-dominated territory because Jews thought pigs were unclean. And as soon as Jesus gets out of the boat, the darkness confronts him. He encounters these two poor, demon-possessed men who are experiencing, to an incredible degree, what sin does to all of us, what evil does to all of us. Look at the story. These men are in bondage to these demonic spirits. Matthew tells us they're living in the tombs. They're in complete isolation. They're clearly miserable and hopeless and helpless. But Jesus comes to them. Jesus walks down the road, verse 28, that no one else would take. Matthew's reminding us this is why Jesus came. Matthew's reminding us, he's reminding you, that all of us, apart from God, are like these two demon-possessed men. Not to the same degree, I'm not saying we're all possessed by evil spirits, but it is the same root problem. Like them, we are, apart from Jesus' love, in darkness. Like them, we are in the proverbial tomb. Like them, we are alone, and we need Jesus to show up for us. That's why I open with the story about Heath. Some of you here today might be in a super dark place. You might have experienced or participated in some really terrible things. Things that you don't want anyone to know about. Some of you might be feeling totally hopeless today. You're in bondage to something, perhaps. You're trapped. And you don't know how to get out. Some of you might feel totally alone. And you're confused. You don't know where help is going to come from. You're in the dark. Listen to me. Listen to what God's word teaches. God sees you right where you are, and he has the power to help. Not only does he have the power, he wants to help you. He delights to free you. If you feel lost, if you feel alone, if you feel hopeless, hapless, or helpless, listen to the powerful, loving word of Jesus. Let's see what happens next. Matthew tells us first about the presence of evil. Second, the power of Jesus. Interestingly, verse 29, the demons address Jesus first. Look at what they say. What have you to do with us, O Son of God? Have you come here to torment us before the time? So the demons, they recognize Jesus. I find this one of the really interesting parts about the New Testament. Supernatural forces tend to have a clearer view of Jesus' nature than mortals do, even if they're evil supernatural forces. It's as if they move at an altitude where the spiritual is more perceptible. They call him, did you see it? They call him the Son of God. They rightly identify him. And they also rightly identify what he's going to do to them. Have you come here to torment us before the time? They realize that their reign on earth one day is going to end, that they are going to be punished by a just and righteous God. This is a reference to the final judgment when Satan and all of his demons will be cast into the lake of fire forever. So from the mouths of these evil spirits, the truth comes. They know the power of Jesus, and they know it right away. They know they've met their match. I was a basketball player in high school, not a very good one, which is why I often had experiences where I knew I had met my match. I grew up and went to Amarillo High School, Amarillo, Texas, Go Sandies, Golden Sandstorm, and we made the playoffs. Why are you laughing at my mascot? We made the playoffs my junior and my senior year, and we would win our first round playoff game. And then both my junior and senior year in the second round playoff game, we played a high school called Dallas Skyline. And we knew we had met our match when warm-up started because all their players were 6'4 or above and regularly dunking with two hands, without a huge running start, in the layup line. And our coach would do the best he could as a coach to try to pump us up. Go get them, guys! And that was the end of our high school seasons, both my junior and my senior year. Sometimes you know when you're up against a superior opponent. That's what these demons are feeling. They know that Jesus is superior to them. So they ask him. Actually, they beg him to let them go out of the men into a herd of pigs. Why? Why do they do that? Listen, no one really knows, to be totally honest. That's the reality. No one really knows what's going on here. This is just one of those inevitably mystifying things that we really can't understand. But what we do understand is that these demons who have tormented these men and harmed these men and ruined these men, who have reduced these men to begging for mercy, now immediately upon Jesus' arrival, begin to beg for mercy from him. Verse 31, please let us just go to the pigs. Don't destroy us before the appointed time. So Matthew tells us, Jesus responds to them with one word, the only word Jesus has in this whole story. Go. Get out of here, verse 32. And so they went into the pigs. The whole herd rushes down the bank and is drowned in the sea. What do we learn about Jesus here? We learn that Jesus has real power. Do you know that? Do you know that? Jesus Christ has real power. In the prior story, he hushes the wind and the waves that his disciples were terrified of and panicked by with the word. And now he casts out these demons with the word. Mark's gospel tells us that one of these demons' name is Legion. A legion was a Roman battalion of troops that had about 6,000 people in it. So this is a multitude, a village, a community of demons that at Jesus' word leave. The word of Jesus has that kind of power. After all, Colossians tells us, by him, All things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him, and he is before all things. And in him all things hold together. We're going to sing A Mighty Fortress Is Our God here in a minute, the great hymn of the Reformation written by Martin Luther, and the second verse of that line or of that song goes like this. And though this world with devils filled should threaten to undo us, we will not fear, for God has willed his truth to triumph through us. The prince of darkness grim, we tremble not for him. His rage we can endure, for lo, his doom is sure. One little word shall fell him. Jesus has real power. But listen, we also see Jesus has deep compassion. He pities these two men. He loves these men. He helps these men. He walks right into their darkness and straight away delivers them out of bondage and depression. He shows them great mercy. That's the great thing, the unique thing about the Christian faith. The only true God made manifest in Jesus of Nazareth is not just raw power. He uses his power in order to serve, in order to love. Jesus came to push back the darkness, to destroy the power of the evil one, to end the reign of terror in our lives and in this world. Jesus came, as 1 John tells us, to destroy the works of the devil. He came to rescue people like these two men from the armies of darkness that seek to subdue us. And listen, the good news of Christianity, the gospel, is that the way Jesus ultimately pushed back the darkness is by allowing himself to be overcome by the darkness for a time. Jesus destroyed the darkness by taking the darkness on himself. I mean, think about it. Jesus willingly experiences in his death and burial what these two demon-possessed men were unwillingly experiencing. These men, they're enslaved to dark powers. But Jesus allows his hands to be bound and his back to be beaten and the literal darkness to cover the earth in the middle of the day as he was crucified. These men, they're left alone. They're abandoned. Jesus was abandoned by his closest friends, left alone in the Garden of Gethsemane as he sweat drops of blood. Jesus is killed in a shameful and lonely way as he bears the wrath of God for human sin on the lonely cross. These men, they lived among the tombs. Jesus didn't just live among the tombs. Jesus went into a tomb. Jesus takes the full force of the darkness and weight of human rebellion upon himself in his death and burial. But just when the evil one seems to have won, the resurrection of Christ pushes back the darkness and assures us that its final retreat is certain. Jesus took the full measure of sin and evil so that we don't ever have to. Jesus, in his death and resurrection, assures us that the darkness cannot overwhelm or overtake us. As John tells us in his gospel, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Jesus has the power, and Jesus has the compassion to deliver you as well. He promises that anyone who will come to him, he will never cast out. Jesus will help you. Jesus will rescue you. Listen. If you're in a dark place, if you're in bondage, if you're hopeless, look at the power of Jesus Christ here. Look at the love of Jesus here. You can trust him. You can trust him for redemption and renewal and life. Go to Jesus. Believe into Jesus. He's ready to help you right now. We see the presence of evil and then the power of Jesus. Last thing, let's wrap it up. The plea of the people. The story ends, at least I think, on a somewhat interesting note here, verse 33, 34. The herdsmen, pig herdsmen, I assume, they had watched this happen. And they go and they tell everyone about everything. And then note verse 33, especially Matthew tells us what happened to the demon-possessed men. And everyone in the village comes out to meet Jesus. And we see something, I think, that's unexpected. We see more begging, right? The men had begged for relief from these demons. The demons had begged to go into the pigs. And now the villagers beg. But they beg for something that I didn't anticipate, at least. They beg for Jesus to leave. Jesus, please leave. Verse 34. So what is this about? It's really, again, it's hard to know for sure. Mark's version, which is more extended, gives us more detail. We know that at least one of these demon-possessed men ends up following Jesus, the man that had been possessed by Legion. Maybe the herdsmen were mad because the loss of pigs meant a significant loss of revenue. That seems plausible, but we just don't know if that's what caused them to ask him to leave or not. But I think we can say this as we wrap up our time together this morning. Here's what we know. Jesus comes into people's lives, and wherever he comes, he wrecks shop. Jesus comes into people's lives, and wherever he comes, he interrupts the status quo. Jesus is always an agent of change. He says, I want to heal you. I want to help you. But then I'm going to take you with me. I'm going to go to work in your life. And the bottom line is that some people don't want that. They're afraid of what Jesus might do to or with them, of the change he might bring. They're too comfortable with the norms, even if the norms aren't very good, even if the norms aren't very life-giving. And so the story ends in this strange way, I think, to help us see something. Here's what it is. If you want Jesus to heal you, you have to let him heal all of you. He wants your whole life. That might be scary. You know what? That is scary. That's scary. It's so scary that it's led many over the centuries to ask Jesus to leave, just like these Gadarenes did, because he will not leave you as he's found you. C.S. Lewis has a famous quote that makes this point beautifully in Mere Christianity. Listen to what Jack says. Imagine yourself as a living house. God comes in to rebuild that house. At first, perhaps, you can understand what he's doing. He's getting the drains right and stopping the leaks in the roof and so on. You knew that those jobs needed doing, and so you're not surprised. But presently, he starts knocking the house about in a way that hurts abominably and does not seem to make any sense. What on earth is he up to? The explanation is that he is building quite a different house from the one you thought of. Throwing out a new wing here, putting on an extra floor there, running up towers, making courtyards. You thought you were being made into a decent little cottage, but he is building a palace. He intends to come and live in it himself. Do you want to be rescued? Do you want to be healed? Do you want to be saved by Jesus? He will do it. But if you want him to do it, you must be ready for him to go all the way in. You must be willing to open yourself fully up to him and do his redeeming, renewing work, even when it's a little painful, a little challenging, a little difficult. And it always is. He came for that purpose. He came to save, but he doesn't stop there. He saves with an intent to transform into his image. So don't be like the Gadarenes. Welcome Jesus. Trust Jesus. And let Jesus do his work on you and in you and through you. You can trust him. Let's pray.